Okay, so I know we got Florio on. Forgive me. Where do I get Florio at?
Oh, I think he's through the board.
Oh, he's already there. Oh,
the
okay.
Magic.
Yeah. So I don't have to do nothing on the show.
Don't have
I like
to push
it.
Anything.
I like it. Well, let's bring Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk on. Mike, you heard us there just discussing the Oakland Raiders and their situation. Katie mentioned there was some silver lining with Derek Carr's pinky having time to heal, but moving forward, is there anything that Raider fans can look forward to?
Well, look, there's always a chance that things are going to come together under Matt McGloin, that now the expectations drop, the pressure decreases. There was going to be a lot of pressure on this team to win football games in the postseason, and now that's evaporated. People assume they're going to be one and done, and people assume they're going to end up the number five seed. So anything positive at this point is gravy, and hope for the best. Go play hard, have reduced pressure, be loose, and just try to make something happen. And you know, we'll see. Defense has to step up. Everybody's got to step up, and it's unfortunate, but it happens. And now they have to try to dig a way out of it. And if they don't, it's not like anybody's going to say, "Well, they really blew it this year." Mm-hmm. They're going to say, "Who knows what would have happened if Derek Carr hadn't gotten injured?"
Well, and Mike, when you look at the limited amount of time we saw McGloin in that game, you look at kind of the development of the offense over the last several weeks. And more people getting involved. And then we've talked about it a lot when you've been on the show and just the improvement that defense has made. Did you see anything as that game closed out that Raider fans can say, okay, things are going to be okay. We're going to let this play out. It's not all doom and gloom at this point.
No. I mean, no, not from that game. I mean, I just think you reset, you regroup, mm-hmm. and you come up with game plans specifically premised on getting the most out of what Matt McGloin does well, covering up the things he doesn't do well. And you have the benefit of, you know, a guy who hasn't played a lot in recent years, and they can get ahead of the opposing defenses if they're creative in how they use him, because it will take the defenses several games to catch up. So there is a bit of an advantage that's built into this. Anytime you have a quarterback who hasn't been playing and he's in a new system relative to what he's used to, and what the film that would be out there may show from when he was the starter several years ago, that's helpful. That's mm-hmm. beneficial. And it's all about making the most of that. But the reality is, in the postseason, the intensity goes up dramatically, and it's going to be a challenge for every team, but especially a team that has lost its quarterback due to injury that close to the postseason. That's not something that happens very often. It's going to be a major hurdle for the Raiders to overcome.
Yeah, Mike, my sidebar on that whole issue, obviously you want Carr there for the postseason. He's not going to be there. They should be good for years to come. There's no guarantees for that. But I'm just saddened for him that he's not getting the taste of playoff experience. How big of a deal would that be come the next time they get to the postseason that Carr actually hasn't played in one of those games?
Yeah, look, the more you've played in the playoffs, the more prepared you are for what the playoffs entail. Rodney Harrison says it every year at this time, that everything becomes more intense. Everything increases by a notch or more. And how do you deal with that pressure? We've seen guys who wilt under the pressure. We've seen guys who just shrug. Eli Manning, the prime example of somebody who's completely unfazed by the pressure of the postseason. But you don't know how you're going to react until you get the playoff experience. And Derek Carr is going to have to wait at least 1 year to experience his first playoff game.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk with us here on The Drive. Mike, the Cowboys beat the Lions last night in a game that the Cowboys didn't need and the Lions did. Does that say more about Dallas or more about Detroit?
Well, it says more about Detroit, quite frankly, because, look, Detroit, I don't want to call them frauds, but, you know, but look at their wins. They have beaten one team that currently has a winning record, and that is the Washington franchise. Every other team that Detroit has beaten this year currently has a losing record, and they've won a lot of close games. Well, okay, you can make the argument that the more close games you win, the better off you'll be in future close games, because you understand what it takes, and you don't freak out under the pressure when you're up by a few points or down by a few points late. But if you're down 42-21, none of it matters. And I think that's part of the reality for the Lions. When they come up against great teams, they are going to have a major problem, and we saw it last night. And I think that the challenge for Jim Caldwell over the next few days is to get his players to not think we're already defeated, we've got no business going to the playoffs, that this is already over, that we aren't nearly as good as we thought we were, and it's going to be hard to forget about this one. Between what happened against the Giants and what happened against the Cowboys, this is not a team that we should take seriously, and they're going to have to change those perceptions quickly.
Mike, when you look at kind of where we're at now in the NFL season, obviously a week to go, but we have a much clearer picture on what the playoffs are going to look like. I'm more curious and have been over the last couple of weeks about some coaches that their job is maybe on the line. And on ProFootballTalk.com, you guys have something about Chuck Pagano saying he's taking full responsibility for the unacceptable season that they've had. You look at the 49ers, the Vikings, Denver, Carolina, even the Colts there in terms of some disappointing seasons for them. Are these coaching jobs that are potentially on the line, or is it too early to say at this point?
Well, I think it's too early to say because some of them, you know, I think the decision's been made and we just have to wait and see. Mm-hmm. With Pagano, the problem is this. Jim Irsay could have walked away last year with no buyout of Chuck Pagano. And everybody thought when Pagano went in to meet with Irsay at the end of the regular season that they were just going to part company and Irsay was going to hire somebody else. Pagano comes out with a 4-year extension. So now 1 year later, is Irsay going to essentially admit to the world, I screwed that up, and pay Chuck Pagano for 3 years not to be the head coach? That is the dilemma that the Colts face. But they are a long way away from what Irsay envisioned. He envisioned a return to the Peyton Manning years with great players and 12 wins and competing for championships, and they can't even get to the playoffs. And this year they don't have the excuse of Andrew Luck was injured most of the year. And, you know, anytime a coach comes out and says, I take full responsibility, why doesn't he just resign? I mean, I take full responsibility. Okay, fine, then go away. If you admit that you're the reason the team stinks, then go away. Actually, I think the real reason is the front office has done a poor job of putting talent around Andrew Luck, and he's closer to Archie Manning than Peyton Manning right now because Manning had the benefit of Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Edgerrin James, Marcus Pollard, Dallas Clark, Dwight Freeney, Bob Sanders. Who does Andrew Luck really have? Now, he's got some good receivers, but maybe one of the reasons they're good is because they have him. So I think that there's a lot of blame to go around, and coaches say a lot of things. It's easy to say I take full responsibility if you already know you're coming back next year. And maybe that's the real thing to read into this. He wouldn't be saying that if he didn't know he's coming back next year.
Well, and I think the interesting thing, especially in that situation, Andrew Luck, there's no denying that he is a tremendous talent. But when you have a front office that has put maybe one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL around him, where does the blame fall in terms of, okay, coaches are always the scapegoat. What about the front office? Changes there?
It's the front office that's the problem. But the other reality is when Jim Irsay and Chuck Pagano resolved their differences a year ago, Ryan Grigson got a contract that continues for 3 more years. So it's going to be very expensive if Jim Irsay decides to move on. And who's he going to hire? Well, you're going to have to spend money. On top of the money you spend on the people who aren't working for you, you got to spend a lot of money on people to come in and work for you. And I think that's what Irsay realized last year. Look, I can stick with the guys who have been here for the last 3 or 4 years, or I can spend a ton of money on a hope and a dream that it's all going to work out. And he decided last year not to do it. And I don't think he's going to decide to do it this year, but we'll see. All it takes is one day, owner rolls out of bed and says, I'm making a change, and that can happen at any point. And every year there's one surprise, and I don't think this one would be a surprise, but it would be a little bit unexpected after what happened last year.
Mike, what about in San Francisco for kind of place in the blame game? A lot of people wonder if Chip really is an NFL-quality coach. We also know they're depleted of high-level talent. Where would you place the blame on what went wrong in San Francisco?
Well, the talent has something to do with it. And I think the reluctance last year to press the reset button, that's what they should have done. You don't keep the GM and hire a new coach. You just say, okay, we're starting over from scratch. And the challenge going forward, they're expected to get rid of GM Trent Baalke. Well, what do you do with Chip Kelly? Do you hire a GM who is forced to deal with Chip Kelly for at least a year or two? Do you make Tom Gamble the GM because he and Chip Kelly would then work together to try to turn the team around? Do you bring in a GM and say, if you want to fire Kelly, go for it? There's a lot of questions to be resolved there. And the outcome has been unacceptable. And at some point, you have to be doing things that are aimed at getting your fan base to remain engaged. And, you know, you can make the argument, and my radio show producer is a big 49ers fan, and he wants to keep Chip Kelly to see how this all plays out. And you can make the argument that you should be patient. But from a business standpoint, when you see how many empty seats there are for the home games, at some point you got to say, we have to do what we have to do to get the fans to re-embrace the team and hope that it works.
But what's Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, with us here on The Drive. Mike, what's the first step in that when you essentially need 20 new starters on your roster?
Well, the first step is to have a broader vision of what you're trying to build and build from the inside out, not from the outside in. Focus your resources on improving your offensive line. They've spent some top 10 picks on defensive line. Focus on improving your offensive line. And then whoever plays quarterback or running back is instantly going to look a lot better. Look at what the Cowboys did systematically, rebuilding their offensive line through the draft. And they now have star players at the skill positions because they have more opportunities to do the things that they're capable of doing with an offensive line that is taking over games.
Mike, I'm curious, as we're heading into the final week of the regular season, I'm looking at some of the hottest teams right now being Packers on a 5-game win streak. You've got the Steelers and the Patriots both at 6. Dallas, of course, they've been hot all season, but they had that loss recently to the Giants. But you look at the final week of this schedule, and is there any game that sticks out to you as something that we can be excited about? Because a lot of these, you look at who these guys are playing. You've got the Steelers playing the Browns. That looks like it's going to be a 7-game win streak. Not the toughest schedule for some of these top teams. What are the games that we need to have a keep our eye on this week?
Well, and for the Steelers, there's nothing to play for. Ben Roethlisberger is already lobbying to not play this weekend. They're locked in at number 3. They can't get any worse. They can't get any better. The Sunday night game is the big one. That's the NFC North Championship game. And Washington and the Giants at 4:25 Eastern, 1:25 Pacific. If Washington wins that game, they're in. And that makes the NFC North Championship game on NBC win and in and lose and done. And that you like to finish the season, the regular season, with a de facto playoff game. And that's what Sunday night could be. You know, the Patriots could blow the number one seed for the second straight year if they lose to the Dolphins in week 17 like they did last year. They could have had the one seed. They lost to the Dolphins in Miami. Denver takes the one seed, and the Patriots go to Denver and lose in the postseason. The Raiders can still end up the one seed. The Raiders win and the Patriots lose, and they're the number one seed. And the Dolphins have reason to try to knock off the Patriots because the Dolphins can go from 6-5. If they win and the Chiefs lose to the Chargers, Dolphins go to 5 and face the Texans in the wild card round in Houston instead of going to Pittsburgh to play the Steelers. So there are some moving parts. In the AFC, we know the 6 teams, but there is some seeding to be determined. And in the NFC, there are three teams left vying for 2 spots. And so that gives it something. I thought there'd be more up in the air week 17, but there's still enough. I think the early games, for the most part, except for Patriots-Dolphins, the 4:25 Eastern, 1:25 Pacific games get better. And then that last game on Sunday night should be a great one because this is the chance for both teams to turn different but very unique and special seasons into a playoff berth, and that's what everybody is fighting for from week 1 through week 17.
You know, Mike, in the NFC, you've got Dallas clearly with the best record, but then there's a bunch of teams that have been there and done it that we think can do it again, whether that's the Giants, the Packers, Seattle. And then I'm looking at Atlanta, who just keeps winning. I've never been impressed with them really all year, but here they are at 10-5. How legitimate of a threat are the Falcons?
Oh, I think they're very legitimate in part because nobody pays attention to them. They're like the NFC's version of the Chiefs. They're just kind of there, and they win games. Oh, but when the chips are down, they're going to find a way to lose. And they're going to end up with a 2 seed if they beat the Saints this weekend. If they lose, then the Seahawks most likely will vault them because the Seahawks, we assume, will beat the 49ers, although the Seahawks haven't looked good enough to beat anybody recently. But if the Falcons get the bye week and the home game, and maybe a team like Seattle or possibly the Giants or the winner of the NFC North Championship game comes to town, maybe they find themselves in the NFC Championship game. And it was a game last year, although the Cowboys ended up 4-12. There was a good game last year fairly early in the season involving the Falcons and the Cowboys where one of the teams was up big on the other one, and the other one came back and won it. So who knows? The Falcons could make things interesting. And I just worry about Dallas when they get to single elimination, getting a little freaked out and maybe being vulnerable.
Well, Mike, you just mentioned Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, with us on The Drive. You just mentioned Dallas there and their vulnerability. And I listen to you a lot in the morning, and I get the feeling you're not very high on Seattle either. So who do you like in the NFC?
Well, if history means anything, you have to take the Giants very seriously. The Giants are on track to play at Detroit or at Green Bay, and the two Super Bowl runs that the Giants have made in the past decade included wins at Lambeau Field. And the 2007 Super Bowl run included a win at Dallas. And most things have changed for both teams, but there's Eli Manning quality. Eli Manning just does not get freaked out by playoff football. And he gets it done when they get into that tournament atmosphere. And so I think you have to take them very seriously. And I think the Packers, given how hot they are and given the quality of the quarterback, you know, all the time and I say this, hey, all you got to do is punch a ticket to the playoffs and you could win it all. And we've seen it happen. Sixth seed like the Packers 6 years ago, the Steelers 11 years ago. We've seen five seeds like the Giants win it. They were a four seed another year and they won it. But the thing is, the teams that win it from the lower seeds have great quarterbacks. And you got a hot quarterback in Aaron Rodgers. You have Eli Manning, who never gets freaked out. And those are the two teams, Packers and Giants, that I'd be most concerned about if I was the Cowboys.
Yesterday, Mike, we see the Browns win their first game of the season, which is, you know, as a former athlete, I'm like, good for you, because you don't want your name to be associated with that. It's brutal enough to go through it during the season. But then later in the day, we see the 49ers win their second game. I know a lot of people are sitting here going, should that have been something that the 49ers had their eye on? Or does it really matter? Jason Ross made the point earlier in our show. He said, you know, the 49ers aren't one player away, so it doesn't really matter. Do you look at that and you're like, you wash. It doesn't matter. Who cares? They won. Both teams needed a win, and it is what it is.
Once your team is not going to make the playoffs, I think it's better to lose as many games as possible and finish as high as you can in the draft order. How many years, and I think it's every year, but we look at where a team picks and says, oh, if they had just been two spots higher, they could have gotten so-and-so. And look at how much is given up in trade to move up a few spots. Mm-hmm. Lose when you're done, lose. And I'm amazed that there isn't more talk about tanking, because it doesn't happen within the confines of a coach telling his players,
right,
we're not going to try to win. What happens is we hear things like the Broncos saying, we may start Paxton Lynch, or, you know, we're going to try this guy at running back or that guy at receiver. We want to see what our younger players can do. And the coincidental benefit is maybe we lose in a game that doesn't matter, and maybe we draft higher next year. And I'm convinced that 2 years ago, the Buccaneers deliberately tanked in Week 17. They took key players off of the field in the second half of a game they were winning by double digits against the Saints. The Saints came back and won, and the Buccaneers nailed down the number one pick in the draft. And I think that was as clear of a tank as we've ever seen. And at some point, the NFL just needs to say, we're going to have a draft lottery. People go crazy when I suggest that. I don't know what's so outlandish about it. It would be a great revenue generator for the NFL. It would take away some of that temptation to tank down the stretch. And once upon a time, the NFL did have a draft lottery. It was years ago. But I think it's something that they should consider, because the temptation to tank is real. It's just one of those things that nobody ever talks about.
Well, and why is that too, Mike? I mean, we talk about it all the time on the NBA side of things. Obviously, you've got the lottery on that side. We don't hear about it in the NFL. And you're right. You don't never tell your players, hey, you know, we got to lose this game. You make decisions based on the personnel you put out there on the field. But tanking is very much a real thing. Why do we not hear about it in the NFL?
Well, I think that the league doesn't want us talking about it. The league doesn't want anything that would affect the integrity of the game by way of teams not trying to win. And it's just kind of out there. And I don't know. The media doesn't seem to get caught up in it, I guess because there's no smoking gun evidence of it. I'm not sure why, though. I'm not sure why there isn't more talk about tanking or more talk about doing something to eliminate the temptation to tank. Reasonable minds can differ as to whether or not there is actual tanking, but I don't think reasonable minds can differ on the question of whether or not there is temptation. Mm-hmm. Surely there's temptation to tank. And they should address it at some point, and I'm surprised they haven't, especially because a draft lottery televised on NFL Network on a Tuesday night in March would generate pretty strong interest, I think.
Come on, Mike. People don't tune in to see the NFL. Man, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
Mike, we appreciate you so much, Mike. Thanks for your time.
All right. Have a good one.
Thank you. Bet. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk. .com right there. I was actually surprised by that answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think he was going to say it, because in the NFL, fourth-round picks, third-round picks are so coveted and valued, you think if you fell one position or two positions, unless there is that guy, the Andrew Luck guy, you're not overly concerned about it. But obviously that's not the case. Yeah, obviously that's not the case. We'll come back with more of The Drive next on Sports 1140 KHDK.